Local News, Culture, and NPR.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, faith leaders in Pike County preparing for a roundtable on mercy and vulnerability, building on the powerful sermon delivered by Episcopal Bishop Marianne Buddy of the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., Delaware Valley Action is bringing local faith leaders together to explore how different faith traditions can respond to the needs of the most vulnerable members of the community. We'll speak to one of those faith leaders and Delaware Valley Action organizer Ed Gregert. It's Flood Awareness Week. New Yorkers encouraged to learn about the dangers of flooding and how to prepare. James B. Huntington is here with a local look at the economy, and the Roscoe Rockland Chamber of Commerce announces the honorees for the 64th annual Two-Headed Trout Dinner. We'll find out more. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Stocks tumbled this morning as investors brace for more tariffs this week. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slid about 370 points in early trading.
Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick says new tariffs on imported steel and aluminum will take effect Wednesday as scheduled. That's the same day the government set to report on inflation for the month of February. Economists say the 25% import taxes could raise the price of cars, appliances, canned goods, and soda pop. They could also trigger retaliatory tariffs on U.S. exports. President Trump downplayed the fallout, though in an interview with Fox News, he acknowledged there could be a drag on economic growth. The online mortgage lender Rocket Companies is buying the internet real estate broker Redfin in a deal valued at $1.75 billion. Rocket says the combination will create a one-stop shop for both houses and home loans. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Canada's ruling Liberal Party has chosen a new leader. Former Canadian Central Bank Governor Mark Carney will take over from Liberal Party leader Justin Trudeau. It also means Carney will soon take over as Canada's prime minister. Carney says he will resist President Trump's economic tariffs and battle Trump's declaration that the U.S. will grab Canada for its own.
Canada never, ever will be part of America in any way, shape, or form. We didn't ask for this fight, but Canadians are always ready when someone else drops the gloves. So the Americans, they should make no mistake, in trade as in hockey, Canada will win.
China has also taken steps today to resist President Trump's new 20% tariffs on that country. China has slapped tariffs of 10 to 15% of its own on a wide variety of U.S. agricultural goods. Ukraine hit several Russian oil refineries and depots with drones overnight. That's according to Ukrainian media and online footage. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports the attacks are part of Ukraine's attempt to undermine Moscow's capacity to wage war.
Video footage posted online shows a large fire burning in a warehouse in the Samara region of Russia, a major production center for high-grade jet fuel used in Russian planes that launch missiles at Ukraine. A large explosion was also reported in the Novokuibyshevsk oil refinery there. The Samara region is nearly 1,000 miles from Ukraine's eastern border. Kyiv has systematically and often successfully targeted Russian oil refineries, military sites, and warehouses deep behind the front lines. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is set to meet with U.S. officials in Saudi Arabia Tuesday to begin negotiations to end the war. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Lviv.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are down nearly 1%. The Nasdaq is down more than 2%. This is NPR. House Republicans have unveiled a stopgap federal spending bill. Congress only has until Friday night to avert a partial federal government shutdown. It's unclear if House Republicans have enough votes among themselves to pass the measure. Even if it does pass the House, the bill must also pass the Senate, where its chances could be harder. In Germany, strikes at almost every airport have brought air travel to a standstill today. As Esme Nicholson reports, the walkout marks a major escalation over wage negotiations.
Ground staff have laid down tools for 24 hours at nearly every airport across Germany, including the international hubs Frankfurt and Munich. The Federal Airport Association says the industrial action will impact more than 500,000 passengers at 13 airports until midnight today. Staff at Hamburg Airport walked out earlier than expected on Sunday and without giving prior notice, leaving some passengers stranded after checking in, a move an airport spokesperson called excessive and dishonourable. Trade union Verdi is demanding a collective wage deal that includes an 8% pay increase, higher bonuses and additional vacation. For NPR News, I'm Esme Nicholson in Berlin.
Authorities in southern Pennsylvania say a small plane crashed in Lancaster County yesterday. The five people aboard were hospitalized. No one on the ground was hurt. There have been a string of plane accidents in the past few weeks in the U.S. That includes the deadly crash of a small plane on a medical flight outside Philadelphia at the end of January. Also in January, 67 people died when two aircraft collided at an airport outside of Washington. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. As fear grows over issues like deportation, family separation, and cuts to vital services, faith leaders in Pike County are uniting to address a critical issue, mercy for the vulnerable. Inspired by a sermon by Episcopal Bishop Marian Budde of the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., Delaware Valley Action is hosting a roundtable discussion with local faith leaders. It's an event set for March 12th from 6 to 7:30 at the Delaware Valley Action Community Engagement Center in Milford, and that will explore how various faith traditions can support those most in need. Joining us now with more are Ed Gregert of Delaware Valley Action and Reverend Jen Lavallo of the Milford United Methodist Church. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. Ed, it seems you were moved by Bishop Budde's sermon on mercy. Tell us about your reaction to that sermon and how it inspired you to gather these faith leaders to address the needs of the most vulnerable in our community.
Well, and actually it started before that sermon, because around Milford, on both online in local forums and on posted on walls, appeared these flyers that said, report illegal aliens in your neighborhood, at schools, at work, at church, at restaurants. There is nowhere to hide, and then gave a phone number. And so that is the kind of the context in which we were wondering what could happen. Is this really happening in our Pike County, in our community? And then when Bishop Budde gave her sermon, that kind of was the spark. I say, hey, let's find ways in which we bring the community together around shared values instead of just furthering the hate feelings that that this flyer represented.
Wow, that's shocking to learn about those flyers. Were those in multiple locations around the community?
Yes. And of course, online. And I'm looking at one right now. We took photos of them so that it was clear that it was real. Now, I have no idea how many went up. It was posted in the name of somebody called Joe Kidd, K-I-D-D. I have no idea if that's a real name.
Yeah. Reverend, the theme of mercy central to so many faith traditions, how do you think that coming together with other local faith leaders in the community can help serve these vulnerable communities in this time?
Well, I think it's really important for us to have the connection, to communicate with one another, because what I've experienced here in my own local congregation is that we have people who are, politically Republican and Democrat, independent, and they are all able to come together and care for one another and have healthy conversations. And I feel if we can do it in our church, then we can certainly do it in our community. And I feel that the catalyst to that is respect, honor, and to treat one another with mercy, which is foundational to our faith and to our heritage, to the Jewish tradition as well.
Have you heard from folks in your community or your congregation expressing fears about what's going on in these issues, especially around immigration and other issues?
Oh, definitely. I can't tell you how many people, not even from my own congregation, but people I've encountered on the street, literally, who are afraid. They're afraid for their country. They're afraid for their neighbors. They're afraid for themselves. I have elderly women who are thinking they're going to have to go back to work because they're afraid of Social Security. That's a, you know, a totally different issue, but it's what's happening in our environment right now. We're dealing with fear, and when fear is in control, it's a dangerous situation.
And Ed, this roundtable, as the Reverend said, is not only just addressing these issues around immigration, but just this general idea of fear around so many things that are going on so rapidly, so much rapid change, cuts to essential services, folks getting laid off or fired. Why do you believe it's important to have this multi-faith conversation right now?
Well, I think that the issue, of empathy, of concern for our human members of our community is really important. And I felt we invited every faith leader in the community, actually, to be involved in this, to indicate how each of our various and very diverse faiths address this issue of empathy and of respect, as Reverend Jan just said. And so the Unitarian Universalists, the Methodists, the Jewish Fellowship of Hemlock Farms, the retired Episcopal priest, a number of faith leaders are coming together to share and then really build that sense of community. And again, as I mentioned, shared values of respect and empathy, because that's how we as a community can hang together and actually make life, the quality of life, better in our community.
And you have, as you mentioned, many faith leaders throughout the area. Daryl Berger of Unitarian Universalist, Ralph Pinto of Corpus, the National Association for Inclusive Ministry, Reverend Jen from Milford United Methodist, Judith Mock from the Jewish Fellowship of Hemlock Farms, and Reverend Martha Bonwit, a retired Episcopal priest. And what I find so interesting and encouraging about this, I must say, to both of you, is that you're addressing this through that lens of empathy, especially when there's so much fear going on and so many folks reacting in different ways. I think a lot of what, at least some of my personal reaction has been to some of these things that are going on is that, well, that's not a very a Christian thing to do or a very godlike thing to do. How do you see the church's role in addressing these fears as a local faith leader, Reverend Jen?
Well, definitely. I mean, I feel like we really need to provide an alternative narrative to the narrative of hate and bigotry and alienation that is out there right now. And, you know, from the pulpit, I preach the gospel, which is a gospel of grace, a gospel of love, a gospel of inclusion. Just this past Sunday, I was speaking about the two names of God, which are Yahweh and Elohim, which mean mercy and justice, and the belief that the justice of God is lived out in our world in acts of mercy, not acts of power. And this is a message that is just so clear to those of us who are really searching the scriptures. And we believe that God is the God, the creator of all people, and that we are all called to live out that mercy in the world, to seek justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God, which was what Reverend Buddy was preaching on. She was preaching on scripture. I heard that sermon and I thought, oh, this is a beautiful sermon. And then the next day I couldn't believe how many people were offended by it when it was simply based in scripture.
I think that was also a lot of people's reactions. Ed, did you find a similar reaction?
Oh, absolutely. And as you mentioned earlier, Tim, it's not just those who are under a threat of deportation. It's also other groups that are marginalized in our case in Pike County, such as the LGBTQ community. The level of anti-Semitism, of hate for these kinds of groups has been given a voice by what's happening in Washington, D.C. And it's kind of to counter this level and this kind of hate, as well as dealing with recent immigrants.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Ed Gregert of Delaware Valley Action and the Reverend Jen Lavallo of Milford United Methodist Church. They're participating in a roundtable with faith leaders in Pike County coming up in a couple of days on March 12th at the Delaware Valley Action Community Engagement Center in Milford to explore how various faith traditions can support those most in need. It is a roundtable around mercy. Ed, what do you think are some of the most urgent needs facing the vulnerable populations in Pike County right now? You mentioned a few of them, but what do you think some of the most urgent needs are?
Well, I think it's safety. It's freedom from the fear that Pastor Jen mentioned earlier. The fear of, I mean, many people aren't going to work because they're afraid of what's going to happen. Many of our community are, in fact, recent immigrants, and they are major contributors to our community, whether it's in terms of the work they're providing, whether it's in the taxes they're paying. They are really great members of our community, and it's to make them feel safe, as the rest of us should be as well. And I hope that's what comes out. And it's not just, obviously, the faith leaders talking. It's basically getting the attendees to share their own perspective, their own observations, and their own concerns, so that we as a whole community can come together around this issue.
Yeah, you're inviting the community to come to this roundtable, obviously. Reverend Lavallo, there are other faith leaders, as I mentioned, from different backgrounds. How might their perspectives shape the response for mercy for the vulnerable, do you think?
Well, I hope, what I'm hoping for is that the community will see that as these faith leaders come together, that as we acknowledge that we are all on the same page, that we have the same core values, that they'll find comfort and strength in that unity, recognizing that we do not all have to be the same to be united, that our diversity is actually something to celebrate, that we can share from our differing perspectives, that all seek the same common good. Which is love of our country, love of our community, love of our neighbor, that it's that we are connected. And I hope that'll give the community encouragement to know that we're not as divided as the world may be presenting us at this time.
Yeah, we're inundated by that, it seems. And so I think for both of you, actually, like building upon that, do you think that is a practical thing for folks to take away to ensure that this message of mercy reaches beyond the walls of places of worship and becomes part of an everyday life for local residents? Reverend?
Yes, I really hope that it does. This is what we have tried to model in our own local congregation. We consider ourselves a community church. We are part of a denomination that really affirms all faith traditions, and we want people to know that they're welcome here, whether they profess the same faith as we do or not, that what's relevant is how we care and love one another, how we care for each other. We're active in service in the community, and we feel like we need all of us to be caring for each other, to support each other, to say, hey, I see you and I value you, and you matter. Because as Ed said, there are so many people who are afraid, who are marginalized, who are in fear of not just judgment, but of harassment, of even physical danger. And we need to show one another that we are all the same, that we are all humans who care and love and have the same core values. And let's be in conversation. Let's be in dialogue instead of just shouting at one another and labeling one another. Let's find our humanity again.
Ed?
Yeah, my hope is that by coming together and obviously observing that there are core values of respect and mercy, that the people who attend will take that message, knowing that they're not alone, out into their own groups and communities and clubs and organizations, in addition to the faith structures that they may be a part of, so that it really is a movement that grows outside into the various aspects of our community, whether that be the Chamber of Commerce, whether or not that be businesses. And it's a message that every individual can take, knowing that they are part of that same community.
What would you say to someone who's in the community who may not be part of a faith structure, who may not be very religious, who may be a little unsure about attending something where there's faith, quote unquote, doesn't want to attend a sermon, so to speak? What do you think, what would you say to folks like that about this particular roundtable and how you're responding to these issues like discrimination and immigration challenges and cuts to public assistance?
Well, as someone who is actually not faith-based, that really strikes home for me, Tim, because it reflects the fact that these values are universal, and they are not centered in any particular faith or any one faith, but they're human values, and that we all have them and share them. And when we come together, we realize that we have a lot in common, as Reverend Jen just mentioned a little bit ago, that we learn that we have a lot more in common, regardless of our faith backgrounds, and than we do in terms, than we have differences. And so those who come from different kinds of structures and backgrounds, I anticipate that they will leave also with knowing that their human values are shared by others in the community, regardless of whether or not you're involved in a faith structure or not.
Reverend Lavallo?
Yes.
The simple answer is yes.
Yeah, no, we really, because so many different traditions have the golden rule. Yeah. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's a core human value. It goes beyond our faith traditions. And I really hope that we're able to make those connections in our community, mm-hmm. to move beyond judgment and to move toward compassion.
Ed, where can folks get more information about this event that's coming up on Wednesday?
Well, on email, they can write to DelawareValleyAction@gmail.com. And they can go to the webpage at DelawareValleyAction.org and read about it. And we are happy to give them more details. Obviously, we're expecting a rather overflow community based on the reaction this event has already raised in the community. It's gotten a fair amount of media coverage because I think everybody recognizes that our communities do need to come together instead of divide us.
Well, and that is part of the reason why I wanted to talk to you guys this morning as well. It's again, as I mentioned, a very meaningful way of approaching these issues, and also grounded in something, as the Reverend mentioned, that we all sort of know this rule, this golden rule, right? Even if you're a recovering Catholic like myself, you still think of these things in your daily life. So I appreciate you both for being here and for organizing this event. And let's hope some good comes out of that and heals some of these wounds that seem to be happening in our country today. Ed Gregert of Delaware Valley Action and the Reverend Jen Lavallo of Milford United Methodist Church. Thank you so much.
And thank you for having us.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, issue of flood safety awareness. It's Flood Safety Awareness Week, and how to prepare. This is Radio Chatsko.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear exotic themes for The Silver Screen by Michael Giacchino, Les Baxter's classic Ritual of the Savage, and there's music for TV's Johnny Quest. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. Weekdays at 3, our newsroom connects you with events around the globe. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. It's 1 hour each day that broadens horizons and takes you beyond our borders. Join me on The World, afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, we sprang forward yesterday, and it's a little bit warmer, and it's also Flood Safety Awareness Week in New York State. The annual campaign, held in partnership with the National Weather Service, reminds New Yorkers about the dangers of flooding and how to prepare for emergencies. National Weather Service emphasizes that flooding can occur at any time of the year in New York, urging residents to stay informed about weather and river forecasts, especially those living near streams or rivers. The increased risk of flooding is a growing concern nationwide due to climate change. Flooding is responsible for billions in damages and nearly 100 deaths annually in the United States. I spoke to Mitchell Gaines of the National Weather Service in Binghamton about Flood Safety Awareness Week.
Flooding is definitely one of the most things that we can kind of take for granted and go, oh, it's just a little bit of water, particularly when it comes to the depth of water. Somebody driving their car through what appears to just be a little puddle of water, it actually only takes 6 inches of water for a person to be swept off their feet and 12 inches of water for a vehicle to be picked up and swept off a road surface. So even that water that doesn't look that deep, especially at nighttime, can be really dangerous.
What specific risks does New York face when it comes to flooding, and how does climate change factor into this?
Well, in terms of our risks for flooding, we are at fairly high risk here. We have a lot of differences with terrain. So at the ridge tops, you get all that rain from the top of the ridges that comes down into the valley areas, and especially when we get really intense rainfall, you're getting a lot of water that's coming into smaller areas and collecting. So quite a bit of the area is prone to flash flooding. And in terms of the climate change, we're mainly focused on what's going on over the course of the next 7 days. So we focus in on what each individual storm will do instead of looking at things in terms of a longer lens.
You mentioned localized flooding, ice jams with forecasted rain and warmer temperatures. How concerned should folks be in the area about ice jams? And also, I mean, how do those form? How can they? Why are they particularly dangerous?
The way that ice jams form is that we've had a normal to a little bit below normal in terms of a winter across our area. So with that has allowed the ice to build up, unlike the past few winters. And we go through these freeze-thaw cycles, especially this time of the year. We're starting to warm up a little bit. We cool back down again. So that ice is breaking up and then reforming. And of course, as it's breaking up, it's moving through the river and moving through rivers and streams. And it gets to a point where the river or stream narrows a bit, and that's where that ice can get jammed up. So the water that's naturally flowing in behind it has nowhere to go but to swell the flood bank or to swell the river a little bit, and that's where you get your flooding from. All that water has nowhere to go, and it just goes around the ice jam and floods.
What areas of New York are at most risk for flooding in the coming days as we're observing Flood Safety Awareness Week?
Well, with our recent warm up for the past several days, we've seen that a lot of central New York has lost a fair amount of ice and snow cover, but still, once you get up to Cortland and you go up Interstate 81 toward the and further northeast toward portions of the Catskills and the Mohawk Valley, we're still dealing with several inches of snow on the ground, fortunately, for the next week, we're looking at fairly dry conditions, besides a few rain or snow showers here or there, but Once temperatures warm up next week, we're looking at a few days getting into the 50s at least for most of the area. So when that snow and ice tend to melt, we'll still be monitoring conditions for potential flooding for next week as well.
Can you walk us through how the National Weather Service monitors and predicts flood risks?
In terms of flood risks overall, what we look at is, of course, we're factoring in the amount of rainfall. We take a look at the soil conditions, whether they're dry or wet. And particularly this time of the year, we have especially the topsoil is fairly wet. So that means it's not going to take as much rainfall, but deeper into the summer, the ground can absorb more rain. So we talk about 1 to 2 inches of rain now with snow cover. is quite a bit different story than 1 to 2 inches of rain from a summertime thunderstorm. So now it takes a little bit less in terms of rainfall to be as concerned, but especially if we get to the summer and we have rounds where we're seeing a couple inches of rain each day with showers and thunderstorms, then gradually the ground will get saturated and that risk for flooding will increase.
Let's remind folks of some of the precautions that they should take. What are some things they can do to prepare for potential flooding?
Well, for the potential of flooding, you want to always have a plan in place. So having that plan in place allows you to get some of the materials and help prepare if flooding strikes. Definitely want to have a plan to move to higher ground as well in the case of flooding. And just be weather aware overall.
And if you live near a river or a stream, are there more specific actions you recommend that folks should take to stay safe?
Yeah, we'll always be alert to the forecast is one of them. But yeah, if you notice if you live by a river or a stream and it's rising fairly quickly, you can definitely report that into us. And we'll be able to use that information to help update our watch warnings and advisories.
Is there any specific information that people should know about if they find themselves in a flooding situation, either at home or while traveling? I think that folks who are driving and in rain or a potential flooding situation have heard the phrase, turn around, don't drown. Other suggestions for preparation or safety measures there if you find yourself in a flooding situation?
Well, exactly, Tim. You actually nailed it right there. If you're out traveling, that's our main phrase in the Weather Service for turn around, don't drown. So if you see any standing water in the roadway, particularly at night, if it looks like it's questionable, you definitely want to turn around because unfortunately every year we see cases of people driving through floodwaters and it turns out toward the worst. Mm-hmm.
Before we go, are there any specific resources or alert systems folks should sign up for to receive emergency updates?
Well, we have information available on weather.gov. That's the 24/7 run website for the National Weather Service. And our office is BGM, so that would be weather.gov/BGM. Also can reach us too on Facebook and X through the social media, and you can have a no-weather radio as well, which allows you to be alerted when that flooding strikes.
That's Mitchell Gaines, lead meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Binghamton. Mitchell, thank you for joining us and for keeping an eye on everything.
All right, Tim. Well, thank you very much for having me on, and wish everybody a safe wet spring season.
And no precipitation in the forecast for the next couple days. Sunny, high 54 today, actually. We'll take a break, and when we come back, James B. Huntington with a local look at the economy. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. The forgotten story of Teresa Urrea, the Mexican Joan of Arc, who healed with her touch.
Teresita became a symbol of a forgotten history that was utterly fascinating. I mean, she was like the Selena of her time.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, the headline right now in the New York Times, markets wobble as China tariffs deepen U.S. trade war. Let's turn to our local economist and local author, James B. Huntington, for a local look at that and more economic issues. James B., hello.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, James, we're glad you're here every Monday, but really especially glad this Monday. It looks like the markets are wobbly, as the New York Times is reporting. The S&P 500 down 1.5% at the start of trading. What's going on?
Well, it's more like tanking than wobbling, I'm afraid. Wow. Since early this morning, the NASDAQ is down almost 500 or close to 3%. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down about, takes a little bit to calculate, about almost 400.
Yeah.
So they're doing very poorly. The news we have is that China has been imposing retaliatory tariffs. They're the ones whose tariffs stayed. They were not negotiated away. They were scheduled to start early last week, and they did. So we have China putting in tariffs on farm products of various sorts, mainly that will affect how much exporting we can do if Chinese consumers don't want to buy these things at the price plus the tariff. And so that's bad,
yeah.
Of course.
Well, and then in an interview that aired yesterday, President Trump refused to rule out the possibility of a recession, stating that the economy is undergoing a, quote, period of transition. You've got this ongoing whiplash from tariff policies, fresh inflation data set to be released this week, all kind of contributing to a drag in the stock market this morning. You know, every Monday you send me some bullet points about what you want to talk about. And one of the bullet points today was, why am I not reporting more on tariffs? So why are you not reporting more on tariffs, James B?
Well, the simple answer is it changes too quickly and it's hard to tell what's actually in effect. We have changes daily on these things. Their tariffs are threatened. Tariffs are given a date to come into effect. People negotiate them away, and they're gone. And I don't even know in the day or so when there were tariffs on Canada and Mexico last week if they actually were charged or collected. So I can't really help with this situation because it's just too volatile. It's changing all the time. And even if I tell you something solid that seems to make sense, I may just get off the air and look at the New York Times and see that that's changed. So the simple answers are tariffs are bad for prices, for inflation, for American consumers. They help the people who are in the particular industries involved, but they hurt everyone else. So as an economist, I don't like tariffs at all. And hope these things go away. I understand a lot of the time they're really just negotiating tools, but we haven't really seen what, or maybe we have in the case of China, what will happen if countries don't jump when we say to jump.
Yeah, you're experiencing the same whiplash we all are.
It's just very much unknown, and I hate to tell you anything unless it's solid and it looks like it's going to stay there.
Yep.
So just be aware, it is inflation will go up additional amounts to the extent that these tariffs are actually put into place, and we will see it.
And we'll see some of that fresh inflation data later this week. We also got some other statistics actually Friday in the jobs report. What happened there?
Well, yes. It was kind of a neutral jobs report overall, I'm going to say. We had 151,000 net new non-farm positions, which was a hair under the published estimates, but still quite high and nothing to take for granted. We have seasonally adjusted and adjusted unemployment each gained 0.1%. They're now at 4.1 and 4.5%. Adjusted count of unemployed was up 300,000 to 7.1 million. The long-term people looking out for 27 weeks or longer, that also went up 100,000 to 1.5 million. The employment population ratio and the labor force participation rate each dropped 0.2%. They're now at 59.9% and 62.4%. Those working part-time for economic reasons are keeping part-time jobs while thus far unsuccessfully seeking full-time ones lurched up 400,000. I wonder if there's a story there where that's up to 4.9 million. Average private non-farm hourly payroll wages rose 6 cents, which is less than inflation, reaching $35.93, and the American job shortage number showing how many new positions could be quickly filled if all knew they would be easy to get stayed almost the same, and it's still at 17.1 million. So overall, with the new jobs being offset by a lot of other numbers getting worse, I think it stayed very much the same. The key jobs report is going to be next month when the surveys will be next week. It will be mid-March, and we will tell then how all this chaos that we have in the government now actually impacts the numbers. We don't know now, but it didn't do much anyway.
We also have a story here about, we've heard about a lot of Greenland and the mineral wealth that it apparently has, but what's the problem with Greenland's minerals?
Yes, well, the problem is they're extremely expensive to extract. They cost a great deal, massive amounts for people to set up facilities to mine these things out, to get them out of there, to deal with transportation, to deal with not only terrible weather conditions and remoteness from any kind of labor source, but also environmental concerns. So a lot of these things they're talking about, even though they're in Greenland, and we know they are, things like rare earth metals that are important for high tech, prices are going to have to get very, very high in order for it to be worthwhile to set something there. And one thing with metals prices is they tend to go through roller coasters. They go up way high, they go down way low. So they will have to know, be confident somehow that high enough prices will be in effect for them to justify for 10 or 20 years an investment. And that's going to be a quite a tall order. So it's great that the things are there, and there may be some that are worthwhile for people to mine now. But it's the same problem businesses are having with these tariffs, where if they have no idea what's going to be going on, they're not going to be making multi-billion dollar investments.
Yeah. I mean, the harsh reality behind it is that it's an Arctic terrain. It will be hard and expensive to get anything there, and it's also not for sale. Last week, we spoke about something called task scamming. Now you have something about task masking. Is that the same kind of scam, or what is that?
Oh, not at all. The task masking is really an old thing with a new name, and it is people looking as busy as possible, taking steps to, when they're in the office, seem like they're doing something a lot more than they're actually doing. One thing we have that's been around now that's coming more into play is mouse moving software that will simulate or actually move your mouse in order to make it look like you're working.
Really?
Some managers who use that, who can track mouse movements, and will use it for a proxy of how much or how hard someone is working are going to be fooled by this.
Oh, my gosh.
Also, some of the old techniques, things I saw over 30 years ago, they mentioned in this article, walking fast with a laptop stuffed under your armpit and typing audaciously loud. And there are ways of seeming like you're busier than you are. But, I mean, if you're a good manager, you'll look past the how busy people seem to be and see what they're actually producing.
Yeah, wow. Is this a particular thing to Gen Z? Do they lack a work ethic?
Yes. Well, I mean, Gen Z is mentioned as the group that's doing the task masking, maybe because they haven't discovered or seen it before. Other older workers know full well, generally, what this kind of thing is. But there's article here in Fortune called Gen Z Doesn't Lack a Work Ethic. They're just uninspired by today's corporate landscape. We have some differences, some general generational differences. There are plenty of individual exceptions. They're described here as taking it on the chin. They're being fired just months after being hired. They also don't show up on time for work. Some of them, that's a reputation that's probably unjustified. But they're not happy in a way with the whole corporate atmosphere. And that atmosphere may have to change because people born after the late 1990s are going to make up a third of the workforce by decade's end. And just like other generations, things have been modified to please them. They are going to need to be, to some extent, accommodated. And if the accommodations don't work, of course, people will be fired or something else. So this is obviously a story in progress, so we'll have a look and see how this continues to evolve.
I'm sure it's a universal feeling. It's not just that one generation, but just maybe feeling it a little bit more acutely in different ways. Let's look at the numbers. We talked about the stock market at the beginning of the day. How are the rest of the numbers doing today?
Okay. Otherwise, there are some changes on these, but not so large. This is as of early this morning, and comparisons are with a week before. So we had gold at $28.96, up 32, regained almost half of last week's loss. Silver, $32.39, up $1.07. That's regained almost exactly what it lost last week. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $66.93, down almost $2.50. That's great news. We should start seeing it at the pump any time, because that's really getting quite low by the standards of the last 2 or 3 years. Bitcoin, $81,636. It dropped $1,250. That's an awful week and a big fluctuation, even for Bitcoin. It seems like they're not feeling as protected by Trump as owners of that did before. British pound, 1.2891, up 2.7 cents. The euro, 1.0820, up over 4 cents. Wow. Well, those two things really tell you, and the Japanese yen, which is up a penny, the 68 cents, those things tell us really that the dollar has been going down. So you combine that with higher gold and silver prices, especially the gold, and it seems like the dollar is just buying less of these things than it was before. We are in some real economic and administrative chaos right now, and we don't know, and investors don't know how this is all going to fall out. So, you know, keep your seatbelt on.
Thank you so much, James B. He joins us every Monday for a look at the economy. He's a local economist and author, James B. Huntington. Thank you so much for your words of wisdom. And yeah, we'll keep that seatbelt on.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the two-headed trout dinner. It's a annual tradition in Roscoe, Rockland area, and we'll find out more about it right after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Whether Radio Catskill brings a smile to your day, some inspiration, or a greater connection to the Catskills and Northeast PA, we're proud to be here with you. Federal funding, about $1.60 per person annually, helps keep these trusted services strong and accessible to everyone in our community. Learn how you can safeguard local public media stations like ours by visiting protectmypublicmedia.org.
Have you ever downplayed some aspect of your identity? Maybe you don't hide it, but you also don't bring it up.
I understood to my very bones, right, what I was being asked to do, but I didn't have a word for it.
the phenomenon of covering. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Roscoe-Rockland Chamber of Commerce is preparing for the 64th annual Two-Headed Trout Dinner, the chamber's annual fundraiser and a favorite tradition of the town of Roscoe, to mark the opening of trout fishing season in Trout Town, USA. Wendy Lamont is the co-chair of the Two-Headed Trout Dinner Planning Committee and joins us now. Hello.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. It feels like spring because it's warmer. We sprang forward and the Two-Headed Trout Dinner is coming up.
It's how you know it's springtime in Roscoe.
It's a cherished tradition in Roscoe. It's been that way for decades. What does it mean to you personally, and why do you think it holds such significance in the community?
Personally, it is something that I didn't understand when I moved here 4 years ago. I didn't know.
Two-headed trout?
There's
what?
A lot of lingo to learn when you move to Roscoe. And when I finally understood and attended the dinner, I felt like a real Roscoe resident. So it has that special significance for me. And it began as just people who wanted to get together and have a dinner and talk about fishing and celebrate the opening of the season, which is on April 1st. By the way, people can come to the first cast at the Junction Pool if they feel like getting up at 7 a.m. on April 1st coming
no down.
No fooling. But it's really incredible to see how it brings together so many different people from the community, people who have been around for a really long time and have come to this dinner for decades, and then people who have been welcomed into the community over the past several years. So it's a really wonderful thing to see.
And at the dinner, you also honor some really special individuals. Tell us about the honorees this year.
We do. So we have two awards. One is the Golden Trout Community Service Award. This year, that's going to Phil and Donna Vallone, who are, you know, some very well-known folks in town. If anyone's seen one of those rolling V buses rolling by, you know the Vallones. But they are just, they've done so much for Roscoe, and Phil has been on the Chamber of Commerce for a very long time, so we're excited to recognize them. And also the Joan Wolfe Excellence in Fly Fishing Award, which is awarded each year to someone who really exemplifies excellence in the sport of fly fishing. And this year it's going to Deddy Flies, which is just such a staple in the fly fishing community. The shop was in Roscoe for many, many years. It's in Livingston Manor now. We'll allow it to be in Livingston Manor. But they're just a wonderful family, fourth generation owners of this fly shop.
I mean, let's talk about Joan Wolfe for a second. I mean, incredible impact on the sport of fly fishing. And then you've got the Deddy family and their impact too. I mean, just bringing these two like world famous names together is something special as well.
It's epic. And
in the world
I don't
of fly
know,
fishing, it really is.
And if people haven't been to the Catskill Fly Fishing Museum and Center, it is so impressive. And there is a whole space there dedicated to Joan Wolfe. And in the museum itself, there's some really neat old, trinkets and buttons and signs from the very early days of the dinner. I would encourage anyone to go there and check it out too.
It's a lively event. What can folks expect from this year besides the awards?
Lively. A couple years ago, I would call it rowdy. It gets pretty loud and fun in there. One of the really fun and interesting parts is the silent auction and the raffle. We have donations right now, over 40 donations from local businesses. By the way, it's still not too late if you'd like to donate something to the raffle or the silent auction. It's a great way to advertise your business. But people buy raffle tickets. They sign up for the silent auction. We announce winners throughout the night. So in addition to some fantastic local speakers and hearing from our award winners, we're going to be having the silent auction and the raffles and some presentations. And I heard a rumor that there might even be some karaoke at the end of the night. So who knows?
It is rowdy. Yeah. So as co-chair, I mean, you mentioned that when you first moved here, you didn't really know that much about it. And now you're the co-chair. How's this experience been?
It has been wonderful getting to know the people in town who really make everything run behind the scenes. You know, it's a small town and it's an even smaller group of people who, you know, Chrissy Rutledge is president of everything. She's the president of the chamber and she really keeps things running. I'm so appreciative to her for bringing me under her wing. But this process starts as soon as the dinner is over. Mm-hmm. We are back together talking about, you know, who should be the award winners, who should be the speakers, you know, what should our theme be this year? Our theme is Celebrate Roscoe, because it is not just about fly fishing, but really all the ways that our town has grown and expanded to bring in different members of the community over the years.
I was going to ask you about that. How does this impact the whole community? And what are your hopes for the further impact of this event on Roscoe beyond just the fly fishing community, but in terms of like tourism or just other recognition for the town?
Well, the goal, of course, of the Chamber of Commerce is to support local businesses, to bring people into Roscoe. And one of the incredible things about being Trout Town USA is that we have that hook. I'm sorry. I did intend that pun. But we do. We can bring people in with the idea of come here to fly fish, but then look at the natural beauty around you. Oh, my goodness. Just the privilege of walking outside in Roscoe and looking around and breathing the free air. It's amazing. And the number of shops and restaurants and bars that we've gotten just over the last 5 years, no shortage of wonderful things to do or eat or see in this town.
And that spreads out into the region as well, like all around the towns and the different counties, you know, the whole area benefits.
Oh, absolutely. And if people get to explore Livingston Manor or Calicoon or go to the cider mill or the things that are, you know, worth the trip but slightly outside of town, it's just such a great way to draw people in and get them, you know, hooked on Roscoe.
You did it again. You did it. You managed well. I appreciate that. Let's remind folks where they can get more information. The Two-Headed Trout Dinner is coming up Saturday, April 5th. Where can they get all the details?
So we are sold out.
What?
I know. It's exciting. But we are still, like I said, accepting donations to the raffle and to the silent auction. You can go to roscoeny.com. That's the Chamber of Commerce webpage. And that's where you can get all the information and learn how to contact us.
And I don't know if you're involved with this or not, but do you have any previews about the Trout Parade and when that's coming up?
The Trout Parade, I believe, is on Saturday, June 14th.
That's later.
It is later.
I've heard there might be a theme.
I think it's like a disco theme this year.
I mean, one can hope.
We have to, one of my goals is to just get the Livingston Manor and the Roscoe Rockland Chamber of Commerce. We need to be friends. We need to get some cross-promotion going. Give me a call. We're gonna promote each other's trout events. This makes sense.
Maybe your two schools of fish could swim
Ooh,
together.
Maybe.
That's
I like
the best
that.
I can do.
On short notice, that was pretty good. We'll take it.
Wendy LeMonk is the co-chair of the planning committee for the 64th annual Two-Headed Trout Dinner. The Roscoe Rockland Chamber of Commerce's big annual fundraiser. It's coming up April 4th. Fifth, sorry. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Tim. Always a pleasure.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder, you can sign up for our newsletter at our website. It comes out every Friday in your inbox. Just go to wjffradio.org and sign up there. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, sullivancatskills.com, Catskill Brewery, brewing ales, lagers, and mixed fermentation beers in a LEED Gold certified building, plus a food truck and beer garden at Exit 96 off Route 17 in Livingston Manor, catskillbrewery.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, sunny, a high of 54, clear tonight, a low of 34, and sunshine and warmth continues tomorrow, mostly sunny skies tomorrow at a high near 62. Looking ahead, some clouds moving in, cooler temperatures on Wednesday and Thursday, highs in the mid to upper 40s, and we might see some rain showers Saturday night into Sunday. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.